Many homeowners in the city of Cincinnati and throughout Southwest Ohio saw significant increases in their property tax bills this year. A city task force has issued recommendations to help Cincinnati homeowners who are struggling to pay those taxes. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. So what have property owners been dealing with, and how do these recommendations aim to help? Joining me now to talk about all of that are Cincinnati City Councilmember Mark Jeffries. Welcome back, Councilmember Jeffries.
Thank you.
College Hill homeowner Edith Smith. Thanks for being here, Edith.
Thank you for having me.
Council on Aging of Southwest Ohio, Director of Government Relations, Nan Cahill. Welcome, Nan.
Thank you.
And Donovan Energy Partner, Andy Holzhauser. Thanks for being here, Andy.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So let's start with the big picture. Councilmember Jeffries, remind us which Cincinnati neighborhoods and residents saw the biggest increases in their property taxes. What were the trends?
Yeah, so what we saw is a couple things. First of all, from the county level, it was very uneven. So 50% of homeowners actually saw flat to declining taxes, 45% saw some increase or pretty significant, and 5% saw double or more. Mm. And so it's really uneven, and you have to look within there and say, okay, where are the real challenges? There were five neighborhoods in particular, Westwood, Price Hill, Bond Hill, Avondale, well, two Westwoods, West and East. Price Hill, that saw significant increases. And what we found through Housing Opportunities Made Equal, did an amazing study, that it was unequal, especially along racial lines. African-American communities in particular saw higher increases. It really is a challenge that is highly targeted. It's not affecting everyone. It is affecting some communities disproportionate to others.
And how did these increases correspond with increases in property valuations? That wasn't always kind of a parallel track, was it?
No, it wasn't. And here's part of the challenge, and it leads to one of our recommendations, is there's very little transparency of how it is evaluated. So the state mandates we use this private company, and they have an algorithm, and it's not really clear what goes in there or not. They claim it's a private algorithm, so they don't want to reveal, but it's a public use. And so I think the public has a right to understand, okay, what exactly goes into it? What's the data? How is it calculated? So one of our recommendations was greater transparency of that. I think people have the right to understand how it was evaluated and what that process looks like.
Mm-hmm. Edith, you own a home in College Hill. I know you own a rental property in another part of the city. What kind of increases did you see in the valuations and the tax bills for those properties?
In the College Hill property, the valuation went up 61%, but unusually, the taxes went up even higher, 69% in the College Hill property. In the property in Bond Hill, the valuation went up 91%. And the taxes went up 72%.
Those are substantial increases terms of your tax bills. Mm-hmm. What kind of impact does that have on you as a property owner in terms of, you know, having to pay those much higher tax bills?
Of course, it means going into your savings if you have sufficient savings to pay those extra dollars that are required. And since I had to pay for two different properties, that was substantial amount of money that I had to take from my savings.
Sure. And I imagine you don't have that money in savings just for fun. I mean, you might need that for something, right?
Yes, yes. Actually, I had an unexpected expense with my car, having the brakes overhauled. That was quite expensive. And just recently, I had to have a raccoon removed from my attic.
Oh,
and believe
goodness.
It or not, that was also expensive.
Oh, yeah. Those raccoons, they're tricky. That costs a lot to get the right person to get rid of those. Nan, these kinds of increases can be especially challenging for older homeowners. I'm thinking people who are retired, who are on fixed incomes and own their homes, and all of a sudden get this big increase in your property tax bill. What is the Council on Aging hearing from people about this?
So, you know, our mission is to promote choice and independence and dignity to help people age at home. So stable housing is one of the number one challenges that all of our clients hear, or that our case managers hear from our clients. So, you know, it's when you are on a fixed income, you have monthly medical bills, you are a legacy homeowner who's been in your home for 30 plus years, to have this kind of an increase is almost unmanageable. And so it's been tough for our homeowners in the city.
Yeah. Were your caseworkers hearing from a lot of homeowners that just worried about what the heck am I going to do about this?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I bet. Yeah. I bet. We're talking about the higher property taxes that many homeowners are facing in Cincinnati and Southwest Ohio and a task force's recommendations to help. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Councilmember Jeffries, let's talk about how the city of Cincinnati has responded to this need. First, explain what the Home Safe Property Tax Relief Program is and how it's been implemented by the city.
Sure. First, when we formed this task force back in March, we recognized there are things within our control and there are things that maybe we can influence. To be clear, most of this, the property taxes, are outside of our control. They are set at the state level. And we are advocating for several solutions at that, which I'd be happy to talk about. And so that was part of the role is what do we want to advocate for as a community? That's important. And there are several recommendations where we'll be putting forward a resolution at council in the next few weeks, advocating for action at the state level. Separate of that, at the city level, we said, okay, what is within our control to do? And there are really a couple of buckets at that. One is we know that there are several homeowners, over $7 million of delinquent home. These are people who don't pay into escrow, but pay directly to the county. Typically,
so
as a result.
So that's $7 million
in delinquent property taxes.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. And typically, they're often people who are older, who might be on fixed income because you've paid off your mortgage, you're not paying in escrow. And so in a short-term way, we established this Home Safe program. We said, okay, we cannot have people out on the street where especially folks who've worked all their life, they own their home and they go into foreclosure or for people who might be in a rental property, they get their rent jacked up because the individual landlord has no choice but to pass it on and they get evicted. So this is a crisis in the making. We can sit and wait and do nothing or we can provide some relief. And so the Home Safe program is intended just for that. It is for people, it's very strict criteria. People who are under 80% area medium income, so people who are truly in more financial need, and then up to $10,000 in relief. And so up until now, about $400,000 of the million has been dispensed. So there's still, if people are interested, they can go on the city website or just Google Home Safe Cincinnati, and then there are applications there. So that is almost a Band-Aid. And then we'll talk, I know, separately on some of the longer term solutions of reducing costs for homeowners, which is the more holistic look that we've looked at in terms of energy and other burdens that homeowners have.
Right. And for that $1 million that the city put into that fund to help delinquent, to help homeowners who were delinquent on their property taxes, your task force recommended providing an additional $1 million to that for that tax relief. Where does that stand? Is that one of the recommendations that City Council will be considering in the weeks ahead? Where does that additional million dollars stand?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, yes, the current million is out there now, 600,000 remaining. People can apply for that. To your point, separately, we recommended making an additional million because there's still that 7 million outstanding. There's still a need. Council, as part of this annual process that we do, we call it the carryover, where we're reconciling the end of our fiscal year, will consider multiple items. And that among, you know, some of the other recommendations are ones that we will be considering in the weeks ahead for additional help.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Ben. Thank you so much for calling. What is your question or comment?
Hey, thanks for having me. I am a homeowner in Hyde Park, and I personally saw an increase of over 50% on my property tax between last year and this year. My question is about taxing, the possibility of taxing unrealized capital gains on very high-income individuals or individuals with high net worth. How is this, you know, large increase on a lot of people's property taxes, not a form of, you know, taxing unrealized capital gains. And a lot of the times, too, this is passed on to renters by, you know, rental property owners. And we don't really have a whole lot of say in, you know, the elected, you know, the tax policy in these situations. Or, like you mentioned before, there's not a lot of transparency in the situation.
Thank you, Ben. Councilmember Jeffries, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, I understand the principle and completely agree with the concept that this is a solution. The solution to that is at the state level, you know, because we as a city don't set what the rates are. We don't. We have zero control over that. So if there's interest in that, and there are several bills, including one that Senator Blessing put forward called the Circuit Breaker Bill, which would help set some limits, that reform needs to happen at the state level. And so for those listeners who are interested, advocate to your state representatives and senators for those solutions. That's the right avenue.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. We appreciate that call. Appreciate your bringing up that point. And you mentioned that there's $7 million overall in delinquent property taxes. City has a million set aside, possibly could set aside another million. So that's where we are in that recommendation. Andy, another recommendation of the task force is related to the creation of a green bank. What's a green bank?
Well, a green bank is, first of all, not a bank in the traditional sense of a depository institution, but is rather a very intentional and broad-based collaborative effort to, in this case, bring to bear a variety of federal funds, federal tax incentives, low-cost financing, and policy all together in, you might call it, a center of excellence or a series of programs so that the individual homeowner, the individual owner of a multifamily building can go to one place and access a variety of subsidy, particularly for certain income-eligible residents, to make meaningful energy efficiency and renewable energy upgrades in their building. And so there's an extraordinary amount of federal funds that are coming down into our community from the Inflation Reduction Act through state agencies, namely in Ohio, the OEPA, the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency, the Ohio Air Quality Development Authority, and the Ohio Department of Development. That's a lot. And so what our goal is here is to bring all that to bear and create a process that is accessible for the average homeowner or tenant or multifamily building owner to access these funds in aggregate and make very meaningful energy efficiency and solar upgrades. And in this context, we're talking about, you know, maybe a goal to see 30% energy savings in a home from energy efficiency upgrades, and maybe another 20 or 25% savings from solar, so that in aggregate, we're talking about cutting energy bills potentially in half in the average home. And so meaningful savings when we can look to scale it.
And my understanding is that green banks in some parts of the country help with new construction to help make new construction more green or more sustainable. Can you talk a little bit more about how this green bank would reduce energy costs for homeowners? You mentioned solar. What are some of the ways that homeowners could access this funding to make changes to really reduce those energy bills?
Yeah. So the concept itself of a green bank, you could probably point to being more than 10 years old and really brought to the forefront through the efforts of a national nonprofit organization called the Coalition for Green Capital, who for over a decade has been bringing resources and market analysis and tools and advocacy to scale these solutions in different communities. That said, it's a flexible solution. And so the way that our community has rallied around developing these solutions, and this is based on individual stakeholder meetings, hundreds of stakeholder meetings, that has culminated in a report that has been issued recently in such a way that we recognize one really big tool here is the soon-to-be-released $400 million of funding by the Ohio Department of Development and the Ohio Air Quality Development Authority for energy efficiency and solar energy upgrades, heavily focused on single-family homes and even more heavily focused on low-income and disadvantaged communities. And so that provides, Lucy, to your question, very significant, in some cases, 100% subsidy for air sealing, insulation, LED lighting, electric heat pump upgrades, and rooftop solar for homes and multifamily buildings to, again, be able to seek, with low or no cost share themselves, a significant amount of energy savings once these upgrades are completed. And so we are waiting anxiously but patiently for these two state agencies, ODOD and OEQDA, to release their programs. We anticipate that to happen in early 2025. We are working now as a community across many, many organizations to bring together the collaboration to develop the pipelines of projects. And this was really a vision set forth well over a year ago by a coalition of the City of Cincinnati, Hamilton County, the Cincinnati Business Committee, the Cincinnati Regional Business Committee, the Cincinnati Development Fund, and the Port. So all those organizations came together and said, we have to think big. We recognize this opportunity. We can't let this one go by the wayside. We're going to bring together a lot of resources to help residents in our community.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Don. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
My question is, and plus, I'm a Hamilton County homeowner and had a reappraisal done, obviously, with everybody else. My taxes went up approximately $1,000 a year. Where's all this extra money going? That's my first question. Plus, if you're interested, I actually appealed my appraisal and had a hearing before the board. And if you want to know my experience, I can give you my experience. But my big question is, where's all this extra money going?
Okay.
This is stuff that we haven't voted on. And if everybody's increase is like mine, the county should be awash in cash.
Thank you, Don. Now, I know some property taxes, there are lots of different agencies that get property taxes, but what can you tell us about that, Councilmember Jeffries, in terms of Don's question?
Yeah, so when you think about where your property taxes go, the majority go to public schools. So I think it's roughly 60%. There's a portion that go on voter-approved levies, things like, our libraries, our zoo, other levies, and a small portion does go to the City of Cincinnati. City of Cincinnati gets actually a fairly small percentage of our taxes from property taxes. That's typically where it goes. And
yeah, would you like to add to that, Nan?
Oh yeah. So the Council on Aging has a levy at the county, and it's approximately about 1.6% of a homeowner's property tax. One thing that's really important to clarify is that most levies don't increase their income when the property taxes increase. So lots of people think there's a windfall for organizations like the Council on Aging, and there's not, because when we set the levy 5 years ago, 4 years ago, it was for a dollar amount, which may have been 1.6 mils at the time. But now it's actually 0.7 mils of your property tax. So I just think it's important to clarify that there are some levies that do have a windfall, but most levies don't.
Mm-hmm. So with that being considered, Nan, do you have thoughts about who does get a windfall when there's this these big increases? Because I think, a lot of homeowners out there say, hey, I'm paying a lot more. Who's getting that? I know the city gets a small portion. The public schools, we have them on the program a lot. They don't seem to be swimming in in cash. Do you have any thoughts about that? I don't know if either of you have any thoughts about that.
Well, I would hate to. I'm not an expert.
Sure.
And it's a very complex formula.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very complex trying to understand what certain levies are able to do, whether it's a capital improvement levy, whether it's a social service levy. So I'm going to defer to someone who might know
that. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we didn't, as part of the scope of this, we didn't dig into that. That's
sure.
a county level
yeah.
issue, where it goes in terms of public schools, which levies are flat versus benefit. That was outside the scope of this. What we were interested in, it's like, how can we provide relief to this issue?
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important focus area for us.
Okay. Well, Don, if you could stay. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Edith.
Yes, and I was going to just add to what was stated already about the levies. With the increase in taxes and the additional monies that homeowners have to pay out, and many homeowners don't have the extra savings, there may be a reluctance to pass tax levies in the future because of this large increase in our taxes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we are going to take a quick break. Don, if you could stay with us, I would like to hear about your experience, but we need to take a quick break and we will continue our conversation after that. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the higher property tax bills that so many Southwest Ohio homeowners are facing and the recommendations of a task force that was created to help. My guests are Cincinnati City Councilmember Mark Jeffries, College Hill homeowner Edith Smith, Council on Aging of Southwest Ohio Director of Government Relations Nan Cahall, and Donovan Energy Partner Andy Holzhauser. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. I want to go back to our caller. Hey, Don, thanks so much for your patience and for hanging on. Please do tell us briefly about your experience appealing your property valuation increase. How did that go for you?
Okay, well, we obviously lost, but we went before a flat five-member board. We thought we did everything they asked us to do. We had a reappraisal done. We had we have a 25-year-old home. We needed a new roof. We needed a new HVAC system. We got estimates for those. We submitted that evidence along with our other evidence of a reappraisal. They gave us about 10 or 15 minutes to present. They had the original county appraiser there. They asked him a couple questions. They looked at us and they took a vote, and they voted against us, and that was pretty much it.
Oh, wow.
We lost.
Gosh.
And we're my wife and I are both experienced tax people. We worked for the State of Ohio Tax Department for 80 years, 40 and 30, 70 years, 40 and 30. So we knew what we were doing, but it was a foregone conclusion before we entered that they weren't going to look at our evidence.
Oh, wow.
So that was our experience.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that experience, Don. I'm sure that sounds like it was pretty frustrating. Councilmember Jeffries, the recommendations, I know appraisals are outside of the city's purview. That was outside of this task force purview. But you did have some thoughts or recommendations in terms of how that appeals process could or should work. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, first, what we heard, and we held two town halls, which were probably a couple hundred people, a lot of folks came out for those. And the stories the caller refers to are consistent with a lot of the stories that we heard from folks. And we've talked to the auditor. I know the auditor is very engaged in how, you know, she's new to the office, how to make that process smoother, more transparent. I know Legal Aid is also partnered with her because obviously they're heavily involved in what other cities are doing and are there different models that can make it a little bit easier for the average person who may not be a tax expert or can't hire someone because folks, typically most people can't. So that I know is work in progress with the auditor taking the lead on that. And I'm confident that she understands the challenge, and I'm confident that she'll be crafting a solution to make it a little easier and more transparent for everyone.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling, Don, and for sharing your experience. We really appreciate it. We did get an email from another listener, Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, "Since this program has been proposed, I've found it ironic that a member of City Council seeks to find relief for the increase in real estate taxes, yet voted to increase the amount of real estate tax the city can collect to the maximum statutory limit during their tenure. There's also this assistance for energy efficient modifications. Steve writes, I guess the assumption is these savings will be applied to satisfy taxation obligations, but at the end of the day, how would one ever know? When looked at in its totality, we have a well-intentioned program, which by their own admission does not solve the long-term problem, while the city treasury is depleted of a seven-digit number. Policies like this make good press releases, but in reality does nothing to move the needle for a solution." What do you say about that, Councilmember Jeffries?
Yeah, so there's a lot there that we could talk for probably several hours. So let me break out the pieces. First, as we alluded to earlier, when you look at property taxes overall, the vast majority, 61% for public schools, the vast majority goes to levies in the county and then regional governments in the city of Cincinnati. So the city of Cincinnati is a very small amount. And in terms of the property tax rollback, years ago, council had said, oh, we're going to set an artificial rate, which actually made no sense. And so we said, no, this doesn't make any sense. The impact on the average homeowner is $3 a month. Not significant. This is not, quote unquote, causing the problem. So what I would say is that what we looked at was, hey, look, the bigger issue is how these are set at the state level, but what homeowners are really worried about are costs overall. Cost of property, cost of fixing up their home, cost of energy. Energy costs went up 13%. And with all due respect, what we've crafted here is very tangible on energy savings. We have massive billions of dollars in federal investment coming down, and it's first come, first serve. Whatever communities have projects ready to go, which really means they have to have energy audits done, will get this investment. And as Andy mentioned, there's subsidy of up to 100%. More efficient energy appliances, weatherization, solar, heat pumps, et cetera. Those are really real tangible, up to 50% savings, several hundred, if not $1,000 a year. Yeah, it's not a, oh, well, so therefore you take this to reduce here. But people are interested in reducing the cost. This tangibly reduces people's costs, not for 1 year, but for literally decades, because once you implement these energy savings, you get the benefit for decades. That's tangible for homeowners, keeps them in their homes, and that's why we focused there, because it's not a press release. It's the reality of several hundred dollars for thousands of homeowners who can have relief. Somebody's going to get it. I want people in Cincinnati to get it rather than folks in other parts of the country or even Ohio.
Yeah. Edith, what do you think about this green bank approach? Is that something that would be attractive to you for either your home or your rental property, kind of having some assistance to save on energy costs in the long term?
Yes, I really do. I think that the energy savings could be utilized to not just pay, quote unquote, some of the additional costs of your taxes, but the energy savings will allow you to be able to pay not only other bills, but use monies for, you know, your child's enrichment in terms of their education or other things that the family may want to enjoy themselves. Also, having extra money means that families don't have to put in extra hours at work trying to pay additional expenses, whether it's taxes or energy costs, which means that children can be better supervised as well. So, no, I'm looking forward to once these programs are finalized and obtaining the monies for improvement, energy yeah. improvements.
Nan, what do you think this could mean, this green bank approach could mean for older homeowners around the region? Is this something you think could make a big difference for them?
Yeah, I do. I think the jury's still out as to the total impact it'll have. Council on Aging has some home modification programs that we operate with the county and some at the city as well for our clients. So that would be ramps, things that keep them safe in their home, bars, those types of things. They're not big. Every great once in a while, we might get a grant that funds gives us the ability to fund bigger projects. So we have been in conversations with Andy and the Green Bank and talking about the real concept that is of interest to organizations like ours and others around the area that do this kind of work is how can we leverage what we do with that money. So if we can come in and do some small repairs and then bring in the energy audit, then what does that open up our clients for? So for us, figuring out that leverage, but then also making sure our clients are homeowners who are plugged in, right? They're plugged into that. And, you know, a lot of our clients are also renters. So for the multifamily program, it hopefully will be a benefit in terms of lowering rents and lowering energy costs that homeowners have.
We did get a call for, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, can I just make one point on the leverage? Because I think that's a great point. So part of our recommendation, for example, if the city invested $10 million in this, the number that we're going to invest is still out. It's to be determined. But the leverage that we get is substantial. So from a federal, you know, $10 million, that's over $20 million, probably $28 million in federal dollars. So there's a lot of federal leverage that we would get. And then there's opportunities for other nonprofits, so who are interested in national nonprofits and participating. There's additional leverage that we can get there. So if we're looking at what is the best bang for our buck for our tax dollars, if we put in a dollar here, if we can get three or, you know, four from elsewhere, that is really obviously a really good return. And most importantly, it's meaningful to homeowners like Edith, who just mentioned, you know, the personal impact that that has on them.
Andy, is that the kind of multiplier that you're looking at? If for every dollar the city puts in, how many dollars in federal funding and grant funding are you expecting could come back to the community?
Without question. I mean, when you look at the number that was shared earlier by Don, who mentioned that he is seeing about $1,000 annual increase in his property taxes. That number is actually right in the median of some of the market analysis that we've done that says that the average homeowner spends about $180 a month on their utility bills. And from the efficiency and solar programs that we have mentioned that are coming out inside of the next 6 months, there's an opportunity to save about half of that, which is about $1,000 a year. So the linkage is intentional. The ability for the city to invest funds to kind of accelerate the deployment of the Green Bank sooner, particularly before the state programs get released, is also intentional to be able to follow on to some of the very good programs that are already in our community, like the one that Nan mentioned that is administered by the Council on Aging. You can't do energy upgrades in a lot of homes or units of rental housing if there are other roof issues or lead issues or accessibility issues. A lot of times those are gating issues to make meaningful energy upgrades. And so we can start spending time and money now as a community to get those issues dealt with and addressed. And then when the energy dollars come to bear, when the state opens up the floodgates, so to speak, on these programs, we will have had city-enabled partnerships to come right in behind the HomeSafe program, to come right in behind the Council on Aging program, or the LeadSafe program that LISC offers, or the Veteran Energy Critical Home Repair program that Habitat offers, and the list goes on. So rather than think of those as their own independent programs, those agencies already work together in the space that they are. Let's follow on all of their efforts with some really intentional energy savings dollars so that there's some economies of scale that we can realize.
We got a call from Leslie. Leslie couldn't stay on the line, but says, to the criticism of this working group and to the complaints about where our property taxes are going, only 60% goes to public schools, but the state of Ohio is giving billions to private and religious schools, and we should be aware of that. Very little funding is going to public schools. It's certainly something we've talked about on this show multiple times. We're going to take another quick break, and we will continue our conversation after that. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about recommendations designed to help Cincinnati homeowners who are struggling to pay their higher property tax bills. My guests are Cincinnati City Councilmember Mark Jeffries, College Hill homeowner Edith Smith, Council on Aging of Southwest Ohio Director of Government Relations Nan Cahall, and Donovan Energy Partner Andy Holzhauser. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Councilmember Jeffries, this is a huge topic. We've talked about how a lot of it's bigger than the task force could possibly wrap its arms around, but you did have recommendations related to state law changes. Let's talk about some of those and which of those you think could make the biggest difference for homeowners grappling with these problems.
Yeah, there are a few at the state level. Some are bills that are already introduced and some are some that are not. The first, as I mentioned, transparency. I'm not going to rehash what I said earlier, but just making the algorithm much more transparent. There's a very tangible short-term thing the state can do in terms of late fees. The county doesn't have the ability to waive them. They're 5%, then they go to 10%. Very quickly adds up. A lot of people were caught off guard by this, had to come up very quickly with that's one that the state could do, is just say, hey, give the auditor the ability at the county level to address that. The third one is the homestead exemption. So as many people know, for folks and who are older, there is this homestead exemption which allows seniors to lower their property taxes. For years, that was not indexed to inflation. As a result, now it is, but it was never reset. So it's set at roughly $26,000, should be closer to $40,000. That is a very tangible action that the state could and should set, and there are a few bills that are out there around that. There's also this bill called a circuit breaker bill from Senator Blessing, which, among other things, sets limits 5% of income on taxes. That bill is most challenging because there is a price tag. He has come up with a way to offset that, which I think is reasonable, which is pulling back from some of the tax credits for data centers throughout the state, which are probably not needed. But that politically becomes more challenging to pass because obviously there's different stakeholders who have different points of view. So those are some of the ones. The last one that we recommended is around a bill that would prevent people from hounding homeowners. So if you think about it, if you're delinquent on your taxes, that's public. A lot of investors will call people who are delinquent and offer a quote-unquote sweet deal on their property and trying to take advantage of them. There are other cities like Philadelphia that have what's called a do not call list. We've explored that. There's some state remedies that are being explored to come up with a similar mechanism. In principle, it makes sense because nobody should be hounding somebody who's delinquent. The mechanics of how that works, there's some state action that has to take place administratively, how it would work, would be next steps in terms of implementing that. So a couple of layers of what the state can do. We are encouraging, they're going to come back for at the end of November after the election for a lame duck session to take a couple of those actions immediately. Hopefully they take it up when they come back and provide some relief to homeowners.
And for what the city can do, what the city can control, we've talked about this $1 million that was already set aside to help delinquent property tax, to people whose property taxes are delinquent. We've talked about how you're recommending an additional $1 million. Where do the local recommendations stand with city council? I guess I'm wondering, what action has council taken? What's still under consideration?
Yeah, so the other one that I should mention is there are some homeowners who are not taking advantage of exemptions today. So there are some homeowners who do not take advantage of the homestead exemption. That's roughly $600. There are some homeowners who don't take advantage of what's called the owner occupancy exemption, which is not, quote unquote, a lot of money, but it's $78. So I would encourage people to make sure that you're taking advantage of what you can in terms of providing some savings to yourself. From a council standpoint, we will be putting forward several mechanisms to fund this through what's called our carryover process here in the next month. And especially relative to some of the energy efficiency savings, timing is imperative because these dollars are going to come down early part of next year. We need to have a pipeline of projects, which means homes ready to go, which means they have to be energy audited. We have to train a workforce for that. So there's a lot that goes into this, and we want to make sure that we are ready and taking advantage of this so we're ahead of the line.
Okay. Go ahead, Nan.
So I wanted to say that our involvement, Council on Aging's involvement in the task force, has been beneficial for a lot of reasons. But one of the most important reasons is the homestead exemption and the identifying the residents that were the $7 million of arrears property tax. So it for us, it's not data we've ever tracked before, whether our clients were homeowners or renters. And so this gave us the impetus to reach out to all of our, we identified about 30 of our clients who were on that list. We've reached out to all of them. We helped to make the application for the homestead and for the city program. But what it also started was us starting to figure out how we can track that, how we can reach out. So we have now reached out to all of our clients in the Elderly Services Program, which is the county levy program. And we've had some great great luck in helping them get about 120, 130 seniors get an application for the homestead. Lots of them didn't know it existed. It's not something that you're, when you turn 60, you're notified, hey, you're eligible for this. So so we're going to be doing that in our other counties as well as this county and begin tracking that. So we, from the Council on Aging standpoint, it was a real benefit for us to be a part of the task force to kind of get that perspective and now going forward be able to help our clients.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on the line. Hi, John. What is your question?
Yeah, I'm a commercial developer and a city resident, and one of the things that confuses me is why can't we change the rate? The rate's been the same my whole career in real estate, and, you know, just for example, when you guys talk about abatements, in a multifamily development, we expect our taxes to be 30% of our expenses, and it's by far the largest number. But we've discovered long ago that if we don't seek an abatement for a project, that just using the standard formula of the state, it would cause those expenses to be 60%, which would make rents unrealistic.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there because I know, Councilmember Jeffries, you have to scoot out a little bit before we finish. Do you have any thoughts on maybe why that state rate hasn't changed? Is that something you've looked at?
It has not. I mean, that was a little outside the scope of what we were looking at. I mean, I would encourage the call to reach out to state reps and senators and explore what the next steps are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. And I'm sorry to have cut you off there, John, but I know Councilmember Jeffries has to go. I don't know that we have the right panel here to answer that question, but maybe that's a question we need to tackle on another program. I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. I appreciate your listening. Edith, I know you followed these task force meetings very closely, as did you, Nan. You did too, Andy. Edith, I guess I'm wondering, were there particular legislative proposals that stood out to you as having the most promise? Councilmember Jeffries was just talking about this circuit breaker, some of these other things being discussed at the state level. What really jumped out at you as a property owner that, hey, that could be helpful?
I think increasing the homestead exemption amount would be of great help. I believe Councilman Jeffries mentioned currently, I think it's $25,000 that's decreased from your assessment value that helps homeowners with determining the amount of the homestead exemption. And the increased amount of $40,000, I believe, was mentioned, would be of great help so that homeowners would get a greater homestead exemption. Right now, I think Councilman Jeffrey said it was around about $600 that's deducted from the taxes. And, of course, if the assessment was increased to $40,000 in terms of the homestead increase would be increased to $40,000, then of course you'll have a way more than $600 in terms of the deduction on your taxes. Mm-hmm. So I think that one's really going to be of great benefit. The circuit breaker that was mentioned, as you heard Councilman Jeffrey say, that there are some complications with that, and we'll just have to wait and see if that will be passed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nan, were there any that jumped out at you that you thought could be any of those legislative solutions that you thought could be particularly helpful for your clients?
So we've been following the homestead exemption legislation. There have been a number of pieces of legislation introduced at the state level, and we've been working closely and following those. Our state organization, O4A, has been really involved. I would say from Southwest Ohio, we should be pretty proud of the fact that we have a wide range and a bipartisan group of legislators who have, call out, we've endorsed legislation from Dunny Isaacson, Thomas Hall, who's from Butler County, Republican, Adam Matthews, a Republican from Warren County, Adam Byrd, Senator Bill Blessing. So there's been a lot of leadership down here as it relates to trying to find some solutions. We have, Council on Aging, have been focused on the homestead exemption portion of it and expanding the homestead exemption for our homeowners.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I found personally really rewarding was hearing directly in our property tax task force meetings from Mr. Blessing and Mr. Isaacson, in addition to their own ideas, talked about how they themselves are working together on some of these ideas too. And so you don't always hear that every day. And when that does happen, it doesn't necessarily make the front page news. But I know that it seemed like a lot of the members of our committee appreciated that greatly. What is the one thing I would share as kind of a piggyback on that when it comes to the energy funding side of this is that the funding dollars we're talking about have already been legislated at the federal government. They're now coming to the states. The funds are already secured. It's not an if, but a when and a how much for our community. And so there are two programs. I will offer them by name just so they start to hit folks' radar if they haven't already. One is a $250 million program called the Home Efficiency Rebate Program. Another is a $156 million Solar for All program, both of which are administered by the state. That's $400 million. And so if you just think about a scenario where Hamilton County gets our fair share based on the population of Hamilton County as it relates to the rest of the state, that's about $32 million to come to Hamilton County if we just bat right at our own weight class. And so that's where a lot of the leverage comes in that was talked about earlier, that kind of 1-3, 1-4 leverage. And those are just funds at the state level that are getting ready to open up. So that's why we feel like there's a sense of urgency and a really great opportunity to work together.
Councilmember Jeffries talked about how there, you know, there have to be these energy audits to kind of get the, everything, all the ducks in a row for this money to start coming into our community and making these energy improvements in people's homes. How long could that take, Andy? How long would it be before Edith Smith or her neighbors could take advantage of these programs and really start to realize those savings?
Well, I think back on March 1st of 2024, we held what we call a Green Bank Forum, and we heard directly in our community, I think for the first time, at least in person, from a lot of these state department leaders, the Ohio Department of Development, the OEPA, and the Ohio Air Quality Development Authority, around the scale and scope of this opportunity and then the potential timing. To some degree, the potential timing is influenced by the state agencies getting under contract with the federal government. And then meanwhile, all of us kind of on the ground here are anxious. We are estimating sometime in early second quarter, April, May, time frame conservatively to start to see these programs roll out. So we got a lot of work to do between now and then.
Okay, early April, May of 2025.
That's right.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati City Councilmember Mark Jeffries, College Hill homeowner Edith Smith, Council on Aging of Southwest Ohio Director of Government Relations Nan Cahall, and Donovan Energy Partner Andy Holzhauser. Thank you all so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.